Hey folks, we are here with the .NET Core team. Pretty exciting stuff. I'm Dan Fernandez, but you know, before we get into the announcements, why don't you guys quickly introduce yourselves?
I'm Garo Khanna. I'm a dev lead on the CLR team.
Okay.
I'm Alex Gionda. I'm a developer on the .NET framework team.
And I'm Jan Kotas. I'm a developer on CLR team.
Oh, it's always good to get to the developers. You know why? Because the PMs will tell you one thing, and you guys know the truth. So that's always the fun part. So what is the big announcement today that's going on?
So as part of Microsoft's open source initiatives, where we actually took our next version of Web Stack open and followed it up with the .NET CoreFX going open, we are open sourcing the .NET Core CLR runtime, which is the runtime that powers Windows Phone, ASP.NET, vNext. And it's the same thing that we are shipping internally, building internally, going live on GitHub.
Sweet.
And yeah, we are ready to open for contributions and working out in the open and building new stuff out there.
That's so awesome that we're actually doing this. Like, it's one thing, you know, you put the slide up, but to actually, like, you know, actually submit and make it available. So let's take a step back. Customers that have been using .NET Framework today, they're kind of used to, I walk up to, you know, a server, it doesn't have anything on it, I install the .NET Framework, and then I can run my, say, ASP.NET apps on it or whatever. What is, and then I have specific versions of .NET for, say, phone or something else. What is Core CLR, and what are kind of the differences between traditional full framework and Core CLR?
So the .NET Core, so Core CLR is basically the managed runtime that enables managed code for execution across the board. Relative to the desktop .NET framework, you can say it's the analog to the desktop CLR.
Okay.
So it has the same JIT, it has the same GC, it has the same type system. The basic fundamentals are exactly the same. It does have some differences based upon the kind of scenario it is supposed to address, but in principle, it can totally run managed code as people understand today. There are different framework profiles. Alex can actually go into them, which are executed by the runtime. So one is like Windows Phone. So you can write managed apps on Windows Phone. So there are certain set of API managed surface that we expose there. There is Project K, which is slightly different kind of managed API surface. So Core CLR is capable and the base on the runtime to run managed code on any of these.
And including Linux, right?
Yes, we are working on a cross-plat Linux implementation of it as we speak.
So when you say as we speak, does this mean, can I take this Core CLR, package up my app, and actually have it work in Linux today, like my Hello World console app or something?
We are not there yet, but you will be able to watch us making it happen on the GitHub Live.
Okay.
As we are making it happen.
So the Core CLR is up on GitHub, but does the developer, because normally you work on, say, the .NET framework, you wouldn't necessarily, like, I'm not touching the Core CLR, I know it's there, and I shouldn't even be managing, you know, doing my own garbage collection, if you will. So, like, where do you see developers basically taking this code to use? Is it really just to get feedback and input into the Core CLR, or is it like, hey, here's some of the things that we want you to play with from a framework perspective?
Do you want to take it?
You know, the runtime itself is like interesting to look on itself, except there are a lot of interesting components. So I expect one of the typical use will be that people will just, you know, debug through the code and wonder what happens when I do this. You know, this is open source project, so we will definitely be taking contributions.
Yep.
You know, there are contributions guide, there are contribution guidelines linked on the GitHub site. Kind of the difference between, say, the CoreFX repository and the Core CLR repository is that the Core CLR is a runtime that, you know, it's really the runtime we are like shipping everywhere. It's like, you know, we will be synchronizing the code between the Core CLR and, you know, the full .NET framework. Mm-hmm. So the changes there will go through more scrutiny. We'll test them more and, you know, be careful about, more careful about what we take. But certainly, we are open.
So when you, like, I'm just trying to think of, like, the process, like, and maybe we can go through some demos, too. Yeah. Like, what do you expect kind of, like, a developer to play with to actually, like, I'd love to see, like, I have my hello world string, and actually, like, yeah. could I step through that,
actually,
see mm-hmm. the allocation, yeah. and...
Yeah, yeah. So...
Because you're going to blow people's minds.
Yeah, I mean. So the goal really is once the sources are out there, you can have academics actually going and understand how production runtime is getting built, what are the kind of things GC does, mm-hmm. how the JIT is coming along. Of course, the key thing is when I do a hello world and it says hello world, it just seems like hardly a fraction of a second, but they're like bunch of things which have happened. Like typically in a bring up, we see about 260 methods getting jittered before we actually hit hello world.
Right, right.
So yes, on GitHub, once someone forks this repository and they can actually open up as a VS solution, build entire core CLR and its native components in Visual Studio, just like any other C++ project, mm-hmm. and set breakpoints into various source files, including our entry point for the runtime, like where the basic initialization happens, and step through it and see what all is happening.
Okay, is that something you guys could show now, or what can you guys, what demos, so, just to put you on the spot?
Yeah, so we wanted to show three very fundamental things. One, of course, was like the fact that we have it in the Git repo, so you will actually see this would what the repo root look like.
So you did a Git clone of
yes.
core CLR.
And this
is,
yes.
This is kind of the starting point where we see everything.
Yes. So stepping back, there is on GitHub, there is like a .NET section where you have CoreFX repo, you have a bunch of other .NET framework specific repos. CoreCLR repo is going to come up there. So it's .NET CoreCLR. Mm-hmm. So once you fork it and bring it over, this is what the root would look like. The source obviously contains the sources. And you can see like there's the binder. The native class library support, the debugger implementation, DLLs, GC, JIT, et cetera, you see all of them.
Okay.
The core of the VM, like the type system and all is in the VM and so on.
Also the MS Core part of
it. Yeah, so exactly. So if you see, that's a little MS Core lib, the cute one. And this is the one which actually ships with the Project K as well.
Okay.
So. The good thing is, like, rather for us, the exciting thing is we want to go out there and work and bring changes. Like, these are active changes which are going to come back to our main repository, like Jan was talking, the main desktop framework.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true for anyone out there. So, how we would develop on GitHub is going to be no different from how anyone else is going to develop. So, in fact, there is sufficient momentum in our team to actually have our various subsystem teams to actually start moving on to GitHub and start building their features out there and bring it back into the desktop framework.
So you actually see kind of in real time development happen.
Yeah.
Development in the open.
Yes, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent. So so cool. So is there some other stuff we can actually see, some of the MS correlative?
Yeah, so effectively, once you are here in the repo, so the tests are next to sources. So you can go ahead and work with them. But so very basic thing is like you can build the 64-bit core CLR runtime and MS Core Lib. And That's how we are initially opening up the sources for. Over a period of time, we are going to bring other architectures as well.
Okay.
So what you see here is it's going to take some time, but basically we are initializing our build system. Mm-hmm. So this build system is also something which is a cross-plat open source thing that we leverage. It's called CMake. And the beauty of it is that we can actually use the same build system as the premise for building platform-specific build files. So our cross-plat effort is using the same thing as well.
Yeah, and when we talk about those, does that come into the platform profiles when we think about like targeting phone or targeting another one, or where does that come into play?
The targeting phone is basically whenever you're running an application on a phone, that's where you get MS Corelib and the core CLR. And the profiles, or we call it contracts, are more of refactoring of the managed surface area that we have in MS Corelib. So instead of having one single monolithic DLL, we have multiple assemblies that are more pay-for-play. So if you want to use it, you have to, you reference it and you use it. Otherwise, you don't even have to download it or have anything to do.
That way, the phone person doesn't have to worry about, say, server.
Yes. It's more
take the pain
of
server.
It's more clean factoring of the libraries.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. So
this is going to take maybe about 12, 15 minutes to go back.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So we can chat meanwhile.
Yeah, I was going to say we make it async await and throw Azure in here and spit up the process and get it all back together. So how would I use this? I'm assuming it's going to have a series of DLLs.
Yes.
That it spits out.
Yeah.
I'm a Visual Studio developer. I have my console, Hello World, or maybe it's K console, just to kind of keep things simple. Yeah. What would I do to now add this in here, back to that breakpoint of the Hello World example?
So the developer guide actually has instructions on how you can actually use Visual Studio.
Oh, you can actually see merge changes in real time. That's always great.
Yep.
You can use Visual Studio and has instructions on how you can actually activate the runtime. And I think that's where a key difference is between the desktop CLR and core CLR in terms of how applications are activated. With desktop, when you run a managed app, the OS loader actually determines that it's a managed app, and it actually calls into certain CLR APIs, which live in MS Core EE and MS Core EI.dll, and which in turn effectively start CLR.dll, it initializes, and basically tell it that, hey, this is the assembly, go figure out the entry point, start executing. Core CLR, but of course, so all that happens implicitly. SQL Server is a custom case, but things just seem to work. Mm-hmm. However, desktop CLR is also pretty much tied to the OS as well, very closely mingled with Windows. However, our goal with Core CLR was to have something which can be easily deployed. So unlike desktop, which requires you to go through a very formal installation step,
right?
You can just X-copy Core CLR, and it can run anywhere from your thumb drive or anywhere.
And this is actually a really important point, going back to that whole, hey, I have to install the .NET framework first, and then my apps get everything. Now you're talking about all my dependencies, all the things, including runtime, is actually in, say, a zip or whatever that packaging mechanism is for each platform, and that's the only thing I need.
Yep.
Which is pretty sweet. Now, is there a way to actually, let's say I have five apps, so that I don't have to, let's say I'm using the same frameworks everywhere, and these packages could get large, to have a, if I manually tell it to have some sort of shared package, or anything for that, is there any sort of shared notion in
Absolutely.
It's up to you to set it up. You can absolutely have say that, of course, CLR is the runtime and, the basic frameworks in one directory and your application in different directory and,
Okay, so somebody has five different apps and they want to have core CLR and they can, if they really want to, they could change it for each one, but they can have shared.
So this builds us to how basically managed code gets activated. So how Hello World actually happens here. So unlike desktop where everything is, the runtime gets implicitly activated here, the act which OS loader does on the desktop is something which what we call as the CLR host, a typical native XE, would do to activate a managed app. Mm-hmm. So in fact, what Jan was just describing, where you can have your apps sorted out in 5, 10, whatever number of folders, and you're talking about the shared scenario, that's kind of how Windows Phone activates managed apps on the device as well.
Okay.
Yeah. So Whenever you are effectively starting an app by clicking on one of those tiles, somewhere down there, there is the cellulite host, CoreCLR host, which determines that this is a managed app, and it basically calls into the CLR APIs and CoreCLR APIs and says that, hey, start up, and here are the initialization details, how to configure the app domain and so on. What are the various paths to the application location? Where are my framework assemblies? And from that point on, it basically says, OK, go execute this method and manage code execution starts off.
Right.
Yeah. So, but the key difference being that unlike desktop, there is an explicit activation that needs to happen.
Right.
For ASP.NET, vNext, the ASP.NET 5 stack, the same thing is done by the ASP.NET host. So this makes CoreCLR a pretty general purpose runtime.
Right.
So anyone can pick it up. They can put whatever they want. You can have five copies side by side. You can just have one, which can be used everywhere. If the scenario is like what you described as a common shared framework, if someone wants to pick and choose and have their own frameworks or different kind of apps, they can totally do that.
And a couple of things here, because talk about some of the trade-offs for why have kind of one .NET framework installed on the machine versus an individual packages. Is, you know, let's say there's some breaking change or something that you have to change. Maybe it's security, maybe it's performance or something, and you want to like just patch it. Normally, you could go to something and patch that one framework, and then it affects everyone, but potentially breaks everyone too. How do you think about how that would happen, kind of in the future, right? Where each little package has their own copy of, you know, some collection class that maybe has a performance bug or something like that.
The kind of the ideal world we think we should get to is that basically every application has everything, like a local copy of everything, and we will eventually get to a point where through some OS mechanisms or through through some other means the DLLs that are same between different applications would get shared. That way, basically, every application, basically, like, nobody needs to worry about, oh, is this really shared or is it not shared or how do I make it shared,
Right.
And the ideal place we would like to get to is that, this sharing happens just, like, under the hood,
Okay.
Like, different types of applications, it can happen through different mechanisms for different applications, but, that I think would be the ideal place to be with kind of the runtime and how to version it.
So another example is a lot of folks are probably familiar with Mono and how its execution framework works. Are you guys working with the Mono team, or how does this relate, like in terms of them saying like, oh yeah, maybe we could pick up the CoreCLR as a dependency, and if you guys don't know the answer too, but like it seems like an interesting example from somebody that's doing a lot of this stuff as well. And certainly, they've expressed our support and interest in working on CoreFX and everything else.
I think you can read some of the Miguel's blog posts about this topic, and I think what he basically says that they will take like steps, right? They will not kind of make wholesale switch now. Oh, okay. We just throw away the runtime that we are building for 10 years and switch over to CoreCLR.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they will basically like just pick the parts that are useful, and over time they maybe pick up more parts, and we'll see how it goes. We are certainly talking with them, and the discussion is going on how we can make the sharing better, how we can make the ecosystem more healthy.
Mm-hmm. And what about other folks, other targets? Like examples, like somebody that's doing high performance computing or graphics, or maybe somebody more like Unity that's doing stuff already with C# for other platforms. Like, how would you kind of expect? Like, hey, do we see them? We're going to do this high performance computing that does some crazy stuff. We're going to change the behavior of garbage collection for to utilize graphics cards or something like that. Is they send you a pull request or like how does something like that stop? That's a little more fundamental. It's like a new target as opposed to just like, hey, you know, add this performance or add this overload for gc.collect or something.
Yeah. I think it depends upon the nature of the change, like you called out. For simple to not excessively complex changes or changes to complex systems like GC, I think it's fair to say they'll send a pull request. Even for complex changes, design level around GC or JIT and all, I think if they have very interesting ideas, a good starting point would be to have a discussion. But if they have a good prototype working, they can actually, again, go ahead with the pull request. And we'll have folks like the GC team or the JIT team go take a look at those changes and work with them to see how we can actually leverage and bring those innovations back into the product.
Okay.
So it's going to be pretty much case by case.
I would say for the large changes, I think good starting point would be to start the discussion. Yeah. You know, we have like the CoreFX, on the framework side, we already started kind of have more formal kind of process about how to get changes in the frameworks. So I would think we will follow something similar for the runtime.
Also important to call out that the code that we have in the open is actually mirrored back into our internal repository, which means any changes that you make to CoreCLR or MS CoreLib will eventually make their way into the real desktop. And with that comes a lot of responsibility because we don't want to break compat with our code base. So changes that come in will have to go through a lot of review because you know any small change can have a ripple effect that.
That's right. Yep. Yeah, so what are the changes that like that are I guess easier to that don't have like when you're changing like the foundation or something because I was trying to think of like an example like if somebody did some graphics library it's only for folks targeting that graphics library that, like you can opt into that change. Like what are there other examples or is that a realistic example for something that wouldn't affect the entire system or like break all desktop apps or from that perspective?
Yeah, you know, in general, I think new things is relatively safe. Changing existing things is more dangerous, right?
Cool. And we call out in our contributing guidelines how to prevent such changes accidentally breaking desktop by correctly if-defing them or putting them in a, or calling them out in such a way that during review and during all of the testing that we have to do, we don't.
Yep.
We catch this.
And what are the you mentioned like targets? So we know phone, desktop. Is K its own or ASP.NET VNEX the carry or what are the actual like all the heads
you know,
for like
the way we are building the runtime? We have basically like one runtime per platform. So anywhere you have like Windows x86 running, you know. The way we are building the runtime is like we want the same runtime to be usable there. Mm-hmm. So if you have, say, Windows x86 phone emulator or Windows x86 web server, like there will be same runtime. Basically, the core CLR DLL should be basically identical.
Okay.
You know, it doesn't necessarily need to be configured in the same way, but you know, the if you want to kind of to have one runtime that works everywhere.
Yep. Okay, and I know this is still compiling. Are there other demos you can do, or do we have to wait for the compile?
We'll wait for the compile.
Okay.
Yeah.
And okay. So, because I was going to say, like, one of the things that I wanted to know, and this is probably you have to wait for the compile, is like the steps required to actually set up the debugger.
Yeah.
From that. So, but we can almost.
Actually, we can meanwhile maybe take a look at the Git repo.
Okay.
And so we go to the repo, and we have everything set up here.
Okay.
The wiki is in the process of getting set up, but effectively, we'll have everything connected up, so you can file issues, open up issues. You can have the contribution guide, like add, edit to it, or leverage it to go build things. But eventually, what's going to happen is, if you want to go set up a debugger, you are this build is going to produce a Visual Studio 2013 compliant solution.
Okay.
And you can open it in an existing VS 2013, just like a C++ project, and go set up some breakpoints in files you want. Like there's a function called e-startup helper, which is where the runtime initialization actually starts.
Okay.
So, and then this build not only produces coreclr.dll, but it also produces the a basic host which starts the runtime so that it can run managed code. So you can actually, So you can actually go ahead and activate use it to start the runtime, and then you can start stepping in.
Okay.
But effectively, you need to have CMake installed. Like I said, that's the build technology we are using.
Now, when you say CMake installed, so it's not actually, a customer would have to manually install CMake to actually run this?
To build it.
Sorry, that's what I meant.
Yes,
like,
yes.
You do the git clone, and CMake isn't something that you guys are including, say, like in a tools. It's like, we kind of assume that you get it in there and then run your batch file, I think it was.
Yes. So VS 2013 is the prereq and CMake.
Okay.
And on Windows, it's PowerShell for now.
So when you say Visual Studio 2013, why is there a tool dependency to build the CLR?
Native tools, C++ compiler and all, we pick it up from there.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So okay.
So effectively, the way it's happening is...
I'm mentally trying to think how a customer who would want to do this in like a continuous integration model, where they would go to your clone, your repository, pull it up. Because as you all make changes, somebody may want to play with like the daily version of the CLR and and having... You probably need to just steal the DLLs that you guys depend on or something.
So yeah, I think...
And by steal, I mean copy paste from a licensed version of Visual Studio.
So we haven't done it yet because we're still working on the plans on how to go about it. But we are thinking about a point in time where we can publish. So as part of the build, we actually produce NuGet package that contains all the binaries, so we may actually consider publishing it so that there's an LKG version of it. So if the scenario that you talked about, if folks actually need it, they can actually pick it up.
Okay.
Or in fact, even here, if folks start to fork the repo and have their own LKG snapshots of the sources, they can. Their build is going to produce the NuGet package, which they can share internally within their organization and so on.
Is that something you guys are, for lack of a better word, committing to, or is it like kind of idea phase?
So we are producing the NuGet package. Actually, you can see it just produced, right?
Okay.
And we are now, so the build actually does the runtime, and then it compiles MS Core Lab.
So kind of two ways to do this. If the customer that doesn't want to git clone and install CMake and everything else, they can just pick up your NuGet package.
We haven't published yet, but yes.
Well, maybe by the time this video
is
published. Yeah, oh, that's I think that's the easier way and probably the more recommended way. Is there anything in particular for why somebody, assuming they aren't changing code and they're more trying out the framework itself, is there anything that they lose by using the NuGet package?
No.
Or okay,
no. It's the same thing. So like Jan said, our goal is to make sure the experience is the same,
mm-hmm.
whether you pick up the binaries or you're building them. Our goal is the same that Alex alluded to it as well. We actually have a mirroring system built where every day if there are changes getting checked into a desktop branch within Microsoft, we will be like propagating them to the Git repo and vice versa. Any changes which are made into Git are actually going to be propagated back as well.
So back into what exactly?
Into our, desktop branch within TFS, within Microsoft.
Because desktop isn't on GitHub.
Yes,
that's
so
the
we
only
have
reason.
Opened up CoreCLR. It's not desktop.
Right. Because like I was thinking, why would you have a CoreCLR in the firewall? But it's not that you have CoreCLR.
Yeah.
All CoreCLR development is GitHub.
Yeah, CoreCLR development is GitHub.
Perfect.
So the build finished.
Sweet.
Yeah. So you can see, like, it finished, so it builds the runtime, and its native libraries, MS Core Lab, it builds the tests,
mm-hmm.
and eventually it tells you where it has pushed the runtime, the
Great.
Product binaries and the test binaries. So here's an example, like, we could actually go to So CoreCLR, binaries, product, x64, debug. You can see these are the things that got produced.
Mm-hmm.
We bin place the PDBs to obviously the PDB location. And at this point in time, there's a hello world.exe which exists.
Okay.
So core run is the, so you can see there's a hello world come out.
What is core run? Because a lot of people know MS build, and or you know that your project is an MS build.
Remember I was talking about how manage code executes, so how the runtime is activated.
Mm-hmm.
On the desktop, it's implicit via the OS loader. Here, for CoreCLR, you need to write an explicit activator.
Okay.
Core run is our sample activator. That is also part of the Git repo, so you can actually take a look at its sources to see how various things actually are done.
Okay.
So effectively, you can think like on the phone, there is a core run kind of thing which activates the app.
Right.
In ASP.NET, V5, there is a core run equivalent thing.
Right, right.
And the thing is, unlike desktop, where most of the time you can run with the typical configuration, like typical desktop CLR initialization configuration parameters, mm-hmm. CoreCLR offers a variety of configuration parameters that are very fundamental to an app execution. Like, hey, where is my app's path? Where can I find the app's binaries?
Okay.
Kind of the scenario you're talking about.
Right.
Right? So one runtime, 5 different locations. So every time you're going to go run one of those things, you have to set a different app path.
Right, right.
A different framework path, right?
Mm-hmm.
So all those customizations are something that writing a host can let you do. It's pretty straightforward, and you can actually copy-paste this thing and tune it to your own requirements, changing very minimal.
So when you say changing, does CoreXE have parameters for it, or do you see customers basically building their own CoreXE and using yours as kind of the template for it?
Ours is the template. They can extend it and have various arguments passed to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you can kind of
But
do
this
both.
Is a very simple one. This is actually what we use internally for our own testing, too.
Okay.
And the goal is to keep things very simple. CoreRun, manageApp.exe, and
right.
go ahead and run it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so, yeah. This is basically it.
You mentioned that there was a solution that you provide for you that kind of has stuff set up.
Yeah,
for
so
you.
Once the build is done, so this was your repo root. So there's a folder called binaries that gets produced, which is a folder called CMake. And in this, you can actually see there's a solution called CoreCLR.
Okay.
So you can actually open it in Visual Studio. And
silly question, for the ASP.NET V5, because you said 2013, would 2015 work?
Yes, a good question. So we are in the works to add support for that.
Okay.
And pretty soon we're going to enable that support too. So you could actually use one or the other, depending upon your case, depending on your scenario.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, because again, going back to like the person who wants to do the K console version of Hello World or ASP.NET VNext.
So, yeah, you can see,
58 projects, awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, folks who are familiar with CMake would be familiar with the details of how it works, but effectively, once you clone, you'll see there are files like cmake-list.txt spread across. Basically, these are the files that tell how the build is configured.
Mm-hmm.
So during that build.cmd thing, we actually invoke CMake, and it processes these files and produces this VS solution.
Okay.
And then effectively, we just do an MS build against it. It uses the native toolset as part of the VS install, compiles everything, and that's what got produced, what you saw.
So if I hear you correctly, CMake is like your macro tool for building the solution MS build?
Actually, that's the technology. They build platform independent build files. So you can use it to target, say, Linux or Windows.
It's actually like, you know, the CMake is used in a number of open source projects.
Yeah.
For example, LLVM is using it to target both Windows, Linux, and you know other platforms.
Yeah.
So we want it, of course, to be cross-platform, and we want
exactly.
need to follow the best practices. So that's the one we picked.
Yeah.
So here you, because it's a VS solution, a C++ solution, you can see VS is indexing the files to produce IntelliSense.
Right,
and
right.
You can go ahead, look at the sources and and see what constitutes various things. So like here is CoreCLR, you can look at Core Run. Like that's not CoreCLR, that's one of the files there, but effectively here you can see how we are, like look at the sources and see what we do, how we start the runtime, and basically configure it whichever way you want. Mm-hmm. So,
Because that's the Core Run XE.
This is the Core Run XE source code, so you can go ahead and do whatever with it.
And okay. It's worth mentioning that this is the native components project solution for MS Core Lib, which is the managed part of the core assemblies. We have a separate solution that you can open just like that in Visual Studio and have IntelliSense. You can look at it. You can see how string is implemented or anything that
is there
interesting
anything
to you.
That's specific to C++ for Core Run, or could I have a managed app that would Core Run if it's kind of assigning an entry point?
Or I didn't follow the question.
Could I build Core Run XE in C# or VB or
no?
And the answer is because what does it kind of do?
So Core Run is our example host. This is the thing which starts CoreCLR. So it starts CoreCLR because it needs to load native components.
Sure.
And if you are managed, then how are you starting or self? So it's like a chicken and egg problem.
Okay.
So that's why any host that starts the runtime is going to be...
the other way around is the easier one, but okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. And so for folks to get started, folks who want to play, GitHub.com CoreCLR?
.NET CoreCLR. .NET/CoreCLR.
.NET/CoreCLR. Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, thanks, guys. This was great. And looking forward to hearing everybody's feedback on this.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks. Thank you.